Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you're listening to Fiber Talk, that twice-weekly podcast for people who make fine art with needle and thread. And our guest this week, from Golden Hind Goldwork in England, Sarah Rakestraw. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Gary. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, thanks for doing this, because I've never done goldwork, so I've been anxious to talk to you. Because I want to learn.
I'm going to try and encourage you.
Go ahead. No, go ahead and enable me. It's okay. Go right ahead. No, I followed you on Instagram for some time, and every time I see that stuff, I'm like, I got to give this a try. So I've been anxious to talk to you. But when I was getting ready for this thing, the history of these things is what always gets me excited. And reading the treatise that you have on your website about how gold worked through the years and how prominent it was before Henry VIII. And then I did not realize what had gone on with him. Boy, he did some serious damage to the art.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was, you've got different periods in time, and with gold work, the main period of time that a lot of the gold work got damaged was the Reformation time, and they burnt so much of it. They just basically went around the country and pillaged and just burnt everything, because it was all to do with, you know, religion and trying to get rid of and kill people. They killed a lot of people during that period of time, and they burnt a lot of the ancient artifacts. I mean, the oldest surviving goldwork artifact is the St. Cuthbert's stole and maniple, and that's only because they hid him away. And then when the people came, he was actually, because they basically opened graves, and they would burn and damage all the bones that was in there. But when they opened his grave, he was actually preserved. It was almost like he was still a person. And so they had to send somebody away to check what they were to do. And in that meantime, in that little opening of time, they actually moved him and hid him away again, away from all the mob. So yeah, that's the oldest surviving gold work, and that's mainly underside couching. That's one of the older techniques that was used in the gold work, beginnings of the gold work.
So that gives you that's really almost a new origin, then, is to have those few remaining pieces to show what the technique was before.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. So there are other surviving pieces, but none of them as old as that one. And then there's a lot of, later pieces, and then it brings in. Gold work over the ages, it's come over from the continents, and you've got techniques like the underside couching, then you had the Ornouet technique, and it was much, much later, really, that things like leather and wires were actually incorporated within gold work, over the last sort of 100 to 140 years. So prior to that, it was mainly the gold threads, and they were real gold thread with a silk core, and then it would be paper, and you'd have gold leaf on top, and it'd be cut into very thin strips, the paper, and then it would be wrapped around that silk core to create your thread, or a very, very fine flatted wire was wrapped around the thread. So yeah, those are the original types of threads that were used within gold work.
Just making the thread is an art form.
Yeah, it is. It really is. I mean, I've watched it being made, and it's fascinating. You can just get lost. It's like watching an open roaring fire, and you just seem to get lost in the flames. And when you're watching goldwork threads and wires being made, you can just get lost in watching it. It's so interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine. Now, I mean, it's just going to be a bunch of dumb guy questions here today, so bear with me.
That's okay. But now, I'm used to that with my husband.
Okay. Now we're going to make it sexist. Okay, fine. Fine. All right.
You said dumb guy questions.
I can play along. It's all right. I can play along. Today's materials are, I assume that gold thread and gold pieces are still available, but most of what today is not pure gold or not gold, or is it?
So 100 years ago, a lot of the threads, like the Jap thread, which is one of the main threads that you use within gold work, it was gold leafed on. So obviously that was real gold on the surface, and it was usually 24 karat gold. These days, some of the threads have a Lorex, which is almost like a plasticky wrap around, which looks very much like real gold, but isn't. You can still get hold of the real gold thread, but it is very, very expensive, and there's not as much of it available or as readily available as obviously it used to be in the past. But with some of the threads, because they're wrapped with a flatted wire, it does still have gold content in it. So things like the Rococo and the passing thread, which the Rococo is like a wavy wire and the passing thread is a much, much finer wire than the Jap thread that's mainly used. And they have a flatted wire that's a gilt, or it can be a 2% gold. So there is still gold content in some of the threads, and then in the wires they do tend to be gilt or 2%. So obviously if it's 2%, it's got a 2% gold content, and if it's a gilt wire, it's usually a copper with a gilt over the top of it, a plated over the top of it. So yeah, you do still have gold content in them, but not to the same degree as in the past.
Yeah, okay, all right. So, because I figured there had to be some just to keep the color and the luster.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you know, you can get a gold color. So you can get with the Jap thread, there's no gold in those threads. Uh-huh. But because it's shiny, you know, you can get that gold color these days with some of the threads that, even though it's not got gold content, it's like you know, when you get chocolate bars and they've got a gold wrapper on it, but it's not actually real gold.
Right, right. Yes, yes. I assume that you have stitched with real gold. Is there a difference in behavior with these materials?
Yeah, the real gold, it does seem to handle better. It lies nicer, and you can get the curves slightly better with it. But the gold imitations are very, very close to it these days. So, you know, it is, as long as you don't, because you can get cheap stuff. And it tends to be very, very springy, and it tends to unravel very, very easily. Whereas if you get the good stuff, it tends to, you know, hold. But you always need to take care of your threads. You don't want to be, you know, crushing or poking or, you know, because like if you've got silk, you might run your fingers along the thread. Well, you don't want to do that with the goldwork thread, because it is wrapped and you can pull the wrapping off if you do it too harshly. So you do have to treat all your gold work threads with care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was picking up on that in some of my readings, that there is a really kind of a different handling approach to these materials, so they don't get tarnished. Damaged. Or body oil or whatever on them.
Yeah, I mean, with a lot of the projects that we do, when we're doing day classes, etc., you know, they're not using the wires and the threads for very long. You're not supposed to have hand cream on your hands, because some could have an acidic base. And if you've got any acid in your hands, or you store it in any acidic containers, then it can tarnish the threads. And there's certain things. One of my friends was doing a tarnishing exercise just to see how she could tarnish. Natalie Dupuy, her name is, and she was doing tarnishing. She wanted to tarnish all this these wires and threads. And she found that if you put it in the vicinity of an egg, you know, you put it in a container with an egg at the side, that tarnished it really quickly.
Uh-huh.
So don't be eating any eggs when you're doing gold.
Okay. No stitching at breakfast.
Story,
okay.
That's it. Yeah, so, you know, things can tarnish because it is real gold. So, you know, and the silver, it is silver plated, some of it, or, you know, you can get the 90% silver as well. And then the copper obviously is pure copper. The silver and the copper do tend to be, you know, lower value than the gold, because obviously silver and copper is cheaper to buy than gold is. So, but you do need to care for your threads and your wires, and you're not supposed to do it in high humidity, because that, you know, the humidity can tarnish them. But generally, some people use gloves. Sometimes if you're conserving pieces, they use gloves, but I like to hold the wires, because
yes,
there's nothing like having a wire or a thread in your hand. If you're wearing gloves, you just can't. I just find it very, very difficult. So you can lay, you know, pieces of material over your work if you're leaning on it, so that you're not touching any of it while you're working in other areas. But generally, you just keep your hands clean and you just stitch. I mean, my hands are always cold, so definitely I don't have sweaty hands. So I don't really have any trouble with my hands sweating throughout my stitching. You know what they say about cold hands? I must have a very warm heart, because my hands are always freezing.
That's what they say. All right, well, we're marking you down here in the warm heart session. Yes, yes. How did you get involved in this?
So
What is your needlework background, I guess?
Well, I did textiles at GCSE, but I had done some stitching before. I mean, in those days, we used to do a little bit of stitching in school. My gran, normally a lot of people get into it because their grans are like really good stitchers. And when they go on the weekend, you know, they end up stitching with a gran. My grans, neither of them were interested in stitching. I mean, they might have sewn the odd button on or darned a few socks, but that was basically the extent of their stitching. The one that did all the stitching was my mother, and she did she's done two City and Guilds, both in embroidery and design, and the original one she was taught by a goldsmith's tutor, and she learned, you know, traditional techniques such as goal work. I mean, it took her 2 years. She did a school banner for my school, and it took her 2 years to do that. I'm following in my mother's footsteps, because my children go to a local school, and the lady that works for me, Kate, she's roped me into doing their banner, which was quite jaded really, and it did need updating, so I've got to finish that by June.
Oh my.
So I'm on a tight schedule for that. I've done the main banner, and I've started doing the inner bit, and I'm gonna get, I've told her she's got to give me a bit of help.
Yeah, June's coming fast. Yes.
That's it.
Yeah,
it's coming. I am a very quick stitcher. Just, you know, most of the time what I do in 2 hours, it would take somebody else 4 hours, you know, because I am so quick.
You're one of those.
I am.
You're one of those. Okay. I'm not one of those. Yeah. All right. Electric needle. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I started doing needlework when I was much, much younger. And then my mum started teaching classes when I was in about 20. And I'd started doing about 21, 22. And I'd started doing my qualification to be an accountant, because from being an early age, very sad, I know, but I wanted to be an accountant from about the age of 14.
Okay, that puts you in a small group right there. Yes.
I know. Most people have no idea what they want to do in life when they're that young, but I wanted to be an accountant, and not just any accountant. I wanted to be a chartered accountant.
Oh.
Because it's supposed to be the best of the best. Uh-huh. There's lots of arguments about that, so I won't go into that now. I'd sort of done my textiles, but I also did business studies at GCSE, and then I went on to A level and I did economics and maths, but I also did art, because the design and art and textiles are never far away from things that I love as well. Mm-hmm. And then I did a degree in business and accountancy, and when I was on that degree, you could pick just a random module in anything. And I actually did an art module on my business degree.
Whoa, you really work both sides of the brain then.
Yeah. So I've always loved art and design and stitching as well. Obviously, whilst I was away at uni, I didn't really get masses of time to do any stitching. And I think sometimes you go through life and there's phases in your life where you do a lot of something and then you don't touch it for maybe 3 or 4 years. And then when I came back to Warrington, which is where I live in England, my mum had just started my accountancy training. And I'd been doing that about 6 months to a year. And my mum started teaching Go Work classes. And when she started teaching them, she'd buy in a large quantity of something and then divvy it up. And I said, well, if we're going to start doing that, being the chartered accountant trainee, you know, we need to actually set up a business. So the business right from the beginning was always my business, and I was the one that set it up. And then from that stage, I just started doing some goal work, and I handed some goal work to my mum one day, and she said, where have you gone to learn that? And I said, well, you know, if I can't learn it after watching you all these years, it's time to give up.
So I wondered where the fork in the road was from your university work to running a business, a gold work business. So that was the fork in the road, was, Mom, we need to set up a business. So you never actually went into the business world then?
No, I was never intending on doing embroidery as a business. You know, I was intending on becoming a chartered accountant and working in industry and going down that road, really. And it was just perchance. Now, when I was first setting up the business, in my accountancy contract, it said, you know, if you're setting up any other business or doing any other work outside of this work, you need to agree it with one of the partners. So I had to go up to one of the partners, being, you know, rather young and naive and not sure what they'd say, a little bit, you know, tentative. And I said, I'm going to set up this business with my mum, and it's embroidery. So obviously it's nothing to do with accountancy. It's not competitive in any way. And they said yes. So I was like, that's fine. And that's when it all ballooned from there. So, yeah,
That's
neat. How I started.
And I love that. Sarah, where'd you learn all that? Watching you.
That's it. I mean, she'd made the banner. You know, this banner took her 2 years, and each letter was about 8 to 10 inches tall. And it said St. Thomas's Church of England School. So there was a lot of letters.
Holy smokes, that's a lot of work.
I know. And every letter was goal work, and then they were all applied to a backing fabric. Yeah. So when my brother was 3.5 years older than me, and she finished it, because over here we do these what are called walking days. It's more of a northern thing as opposed to a southern thing. It stems from religion. So the churches used to go walking with banners showing what their church was, and the scouts and other church organizations.
Oh, so that's why the banner's so important. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we would just walk on one day of the year, and the schools that were church schools would walk, and you would have your banner at the front of the walk. You know, each different church or school would all have their own banner. So it was made just in time for my brother before he left the school. And he got asked if he wanted to walk with the banner, whereas in the past, everybody had been drawn out of a hat, obviously because it was his mum that had produced it. And it was the same when I actually walked, and they said, you know, do you want to carry the banner? And obviously I said yes, because it was a very proud
sure,
moment to be carrying my mother's banner.
Sure.
So, yeah, both my brother and myself carried my mum's banner, which was really good. I mean, you needed two people, either side, to carry it, because it was a big banner.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure there's some weight to it, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, now that makes sense to me because I couldn't understand why the focus on the banners, but that's the school showpiece then.
Yes. And very often they'd have that, you know, hung somewhere in reception or somewhere very visible, maybe in the hall, you know, for people to see it. Yeah. And that's why.
So the one you're making, no pressure to get it just right. Oh, boy.
No pressure. Fortunately, it's a much smaller one than my mum had to do.
Yeah.
So hopefully it will take a lot less time. Well, it has to take a lot less time.
June's coming.
June is ticking on and coming fast.
Your mother still stitch and teach?
She does. She said as long as she's got her hands are working and her mouth's working, she's fine. She's a bit bad on her legs and she needs a hip op. She's got a hip operation in a couple of weeks' time. And that's the second one that she needs doing. So she's been in quite a lot of pain recently. But hopefully, you know, that'll ease up her pain in a hip. And then she'll be a bit better after
then,
that. But
then
yeah,
look out.
Look out. She's coming. So, yeah, she loves the stitching. And yeah. She's very prolific. And she does a lot of it. And she's my chief advisor. She helps me out when I need her, and I drag her to classes to help me out at classes and talks, and just keep her out of mischief, really, you know, because otherwise she'd get up to all sorts of mischief, and we can't have that.
No. Well, that's fantastic that you get to work together and have that kind of expertise by your side too. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people have said to us, you know, it's such a special relationship that you have. You know, it's so unusual for a mother and daughter to be working together like we do. But we just get on so well. You know, if I'm telling her off and I'm getting a bit too rowdy, she does say, that's enough. But obviously, I check myself and go, okay, Mum.
I'm still the mother.
That's it. But yep. We have a lot of fun in classes, and the ladies that we teach, you know, they love that little bit of camaraderie between us is just very precious. Yeah.
Oh, that's a special aspect of any business when you can have something like that. That's terrific.
Yeah.
So you say, Mom, I'm going to set up a business. And the next thing you know, you're running this gold work business and teaching classes. I mean, you kind of dove in with both feet then.
I did, yeah. Well, I thought if I'm going to actually start running a business in gold work, I better actually learn gold work.
Yeah, good tip.
I don't like to do anything by halves. If I'm doing anything, I like to know the ins and outs of it. So I did go down to the Royal School, and I did a couple of slightly longer classes down there just to see whether, you know, after about 4 years of doing it, to see whether there was anything they could teach me.
Yeah.
That I didn't already know. And, you know, there wasn't many books out at that point, actually. There was only one by Jane Lemon and a Search Press Goldwork book. So it was just two there, and not a lot of information anywhere really about it. It was very cloak and dagger, and mainly, you know, kept to those that could do it very well. So it used to be shrouded in mystery.
Yes, wonderful people.
I know.
Well, I suppose that with its ecclesiastical background, that you kind of would get that anyway.
So it's ecclesiastical, but it's also army regalia, you know, the military cuffs and collars.
Oh yes.
And even nowadays, you know, if you see a pilot, very often the little eagle on the badge on their hat, that is wire work. And in the military, all around the cuff and all around the collar, it's mainly the wires that are stitched onto the cuffs and collars to create all the designs, and the Queen's coronation gowns as well. They're done with the gold work. So, yeah, it's the ecclesiastical. A lot of that didn't use the wires, they used to use silk and thread. So if you look at a lot of the very old ecclesiastical pieces, a lot of those would just be silk and the threads. It's only really more recently, and of course that's better for preservation as well.
Sure.
Although, you know, a lot of the silk does, after, you know, 100 to 200 years, start fading and disintegrating. Some of it does. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, we have done we've been restoring one particular altar frontal for a church in Davenham, and there was two angels in each arch playing a different musical instrument, and that was a labour of love.
Yeah, yeah.
That required a lot of work.
Yeah, but I guess what I was getting to is that human nature thing of, I have a special skill that is in demand in some pretty high places, and you kind of want to, you kind of build a wall around that to protect your job and to protect the exclusiveness of it. And I can see how something like gold work would just not be made available to the masses.
Yeah, yeah, there was certain houses that basically they would train people up and they would do the stitching for the royal family, or, you know, for other people, or for the churches. And it was mainly kept to those houses, and they didn't really show other people how to do it in the past.
Yeah. Well, and so, you can understand that. I stitch for the Queen. And I'm protecting that. No, I'm not going to show you how to do it. That's my job. Yes.
That's it. That's it. Whereas, you know, nowadays, everything's everywhere. You can see it all over Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, you know, and it is really easy access to things now.
Yeah.
And some of that's great. Some of it's not always great, but, you know, yeah, it's a lot more visible.
So did the Royal School teach you something you didn't know?
I'm a very big advocate for the Royal School, and I think what they do is fabulous. I spent a day carpet felting, partially out of my own choice, because I'm a bit of a terror when it comes to doing a class. I very often don't do the project that they've got, because if I don't like it, then I'll do something else instead. And my project was rather larger than the project that they had that they were doing. They were doing a very, very small bird, and mine was much, much bigger. So I spent a whole, because I was there on that particular occasion for 3 days, and I spent one day just putting carpet felt down, which is the most awful stuff ever. It has its place, but it is terrible stuff to work with. So, yeah, I try not to use that too often.
Yeah.
Do lower relief stuff.
Yeah. So your business then is, I mean, you really are a supplier as much as you are a designer and a teacher. I mean, you have all three aspects working.
Yes, yes, I do. So, you know, we started off very, very small, and we had, you know, just the goldwork threads and the goldwork wires, and we created our first six kits. And our first six kits were the harebell, the tulip, the heart, the oblong, and the pegasus and the unicorn, which are still very popular. We still have those designs today. They are, you know, some of our best sellers. So then from there, we've created more and more kits over time. So we would design our own and we'd stitch our own. And then, you know, we'd put together the kit from that. And then the parts, we just built on that and built on that. And when we went to classes, people might not have needles, or they might not have frames. So then over time, the business grew, because we would just get what people needed. So then we'd end up selling needles, and we'd sell frames, and then we'd sell scissors. And so, yeah, it built up from being a very, very small business to being, you know, it is a sizable business now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I can tell. Well, and plus, it, compared to normal needle and thread stitching, it seems like there's more gear needed. Can I say that? More equipment needed to do this, or not?
Massively.
Not
No, a lot of people think it's quite expensive to get into goal work, but really, when people do our classes, they very often buy a little needlework pack which has all the main essential needles, and that's £2. And I say, well, the main needles you need are the couching needle and the wire needles, which are standard crewel and embroidery and quilting needles. And I say, just compare it to what you've already got. And, you know, set those particular needles aside for the couching and the wires. So there isn't much cost there. And the scissors, we tend to use a serrated blade scissor. And the reason why we use that type of scissor as opposed to any other scissor is because you must use a very sharp pair of scissors. And if you use a good pair of embroidery scissors, what happens is the wire slips fractionally down the blade. Not that you'd even notice, but it does, and it blunts that set of scissors a lot quicker than if you use the metal thread scissors, because the metal thread scissor has a serration, and the serration holds the wire in place so it doesn't slip down the blade and you know, a frame. Now, you can buy expensive frames. You could buy a slate frame and trestle tables, etc. But you don't have to, because if you're doing smaller projects, then you can just do it in ring frame. But I tend to use the bar frames because you can keep it very, very taut. And it is important that you do keep the goal work taut all the time. So really, apart from the threads and the wires and the material background, that's all you need to do your goal work. Whereas if you're getting into something like Japanese embroidery, then you have to have a specific frame, you have to have certain tools. The silk threads are extremely expensive, so, you know, that's much more expensive to get into. So I wouldn't say that doing goal work is very expensive. You've probably got quite a lot of what you need already.
See, that was one of my questions, because you immediately get that perception that it's an expensive hobby, because just the way it looks, it just looks expensive.
And so
I think human nature just leaps to that conclusion. So I'm glad to hear that. But then the other thing is, it looks very difficult. Is it?
I know. Well, I was going to say that, actually. When you were saying it looks expensive, I was going to say, well, one of the main things that people say to us is, oh, I could never do that. It looks really complicated. And we always say, well, it's not really, you know. So if you look, and we point to where the different sections are on the piece of work, and we say it's basically just couching. So that's where, for anybody that doesn't know, but a lot of people do know what couching is, it's where you lay a thread on the surface of your fabric, and you have another thread that's a finer thread that just comes up through your fabric, over the thread that you've laid on the fabric, down and then up and down. So it's like stitches running parallel to your main thread that's on the surface, because in the old days, when it was real gold, of course, they didn't want to lose that through the fabric. By coming up and down, you would lose a lot of the gold thread. So, you know, that's one of the main stay so, techniques.
So the primary reason for couching is to keep all the gold on top then. Okay,
that's
makes
it.
Sense.
That's it, yeah. And then the other main technique with gold work is beading. So you have a long wiggly wire that's like a spring, basically, but it's very, very tightly coiled, and you don't want to pull it out unless it's certain. There is one called pearl, which you give a little bit of a tweak to, and you cut up between the wire, depending on what you're doing. So there's obviously different techniques within the goal work, and depending on which technique you're doing, you might require the length of the chips to be longer. So the wire, you'd either cut into small chips if you're just doing the chipping section, or you could be doing laid work or pearls over string, which are other techniques of goal work, and you would cut the wire then a lot longer, and you just sew through it, and then you stitch it down. So those are the two main techniques for goal work. It's how you use them and the threads that you use. That's the hardest part. It's not the stitches. It's learning the names of the threads and how to use them.
It's really, really easy. Yeah, the way you describe it, there's nothing challenging to that at all, other than just being careful and making sure it's exactly right.
That's right. I mean, we've converted a lot of cross stitches and needle pointers, you know.
But I have to say,
and I have to say,
I'm tempted to try this. Yeah.
Well, it can be addictive. I do have to warn you now.
Okay.
But with one of the main wires that you use, which is the Bright Check, it's wound in such a way that it's almost like triangular. If you look down into the whole of it, it's like a triangular spiral, and that makes it a multifaceted wire. And because it's the wire's flatted, it glistens or it shines to a degree. And when that's chopped up and sewn down into little beads, it actually creates like a multifaceted look on the surface of your material. And that, it just almost looks like one piece of fabric if you stitch them all very, very close together. Mm-hmm. You can't actually tell that it's not individual beads. It looks like just one area of gold, and that's the bit that looks the hardest to do. People are very often fazed by that section on the gold work.
You're enabling, because now I'm not threatened here.
Uh-oh. No, it's dead easy. It looks difficult,
yeah,
but it is really, really easy to do. You know, and anyone that has a needle can have a go at gold work. And it doesn't always have to be gold work threads. Within the last sort of 50 years, there's been a lot of colour have come into the gold work.
Yeah, I wanted to know about that, because some of the stuff you've shown is, the colours are gorgeous. Oh,
yeah, yeah. So gold work, obviously, it stems from gold, and it was gold work, but they would use silver and they would use copper. But then over the years, you know, there's a lot of colour. I mean, one lady came to me one day, she said, well, I don't like gold. And I said, well, it doesn't have to be gold. You don't have to work it in gold. It's the technique. Gold work is the technique. It's just like sometimes now people do black work, but they don't always do black work with black.
Yeah.
You know, so, and people like Trish Burr that does white work, she's done the book with white work in colour. You know, it doesn't have to be just that set colour anymore. It can be any colour. And there's so many three-ply twists. You can get coloured pearls and coloured check pearls. And they just add, you know, a multitude of different shades and different colours that you could just do a piece in purple if you wanted, or you could do like a blue piece or anything now. But I do like to, in most of my pieces, even if I concentrate on a particular colour, I like to bring in a little bit of the gold, because I think it just accentuates. And a lot of people use gold work as part of a piece, so they might use it in quilting, or they might use it, you know, with black work or something like that, to just lighten and, you know, add depth to another piece of work.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, because that's the, of course, that's it's interesting. You talk Trish Burr, white work with color. I mean, she kind of broke all new ground with that approach. And when you say gold work, and then, because that's always been my perception, and most of the gold work I've seen was just gold. And then some of the things you have shown just kind of stop you and go, wait a minute, this is like so many other pieces of needlework, this is much more than, you know, we have the technology, we have the threads and the colors and the ability these days to really add new dimensions to these older world techniques. And so then literally gold work, it literally becomes the technique, and instead of the material.
Colour. Yeah. 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 That's it. That's it. And, you know, the Royal School, when a lot of the apprentices are now degree students and future tutors are doing their pieces of work and their set pieces of work, they have to use gold. So when you see a lot of their pieces of work, it is generally always gold. So, you know, that then exacerbates the fact that gold work always seems to be gold work in gold.
yes. Yeah.
Whereas, you know, a lot of when they move on from being at the RSN, they then start to play a bit more and play with colour. And, you know, a lot of the degree students do some fabulous pieces in all sorts of shades, and it just really adds depth to your piece of work.
Yes. Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about that. So slate frame, and then I assume that's what you use, a slate frame. And then what do you use for ground cloth? Is it linen, or there must be something with more substance that you use?
Mm. So many, many moons ago, well before I was born, well before you and my mum was born, they didn't actually have cotton. They didn't have cotton material. You didn't use cotton material. You used very, very open weave linens. So there wasn't actually backing fabric used, you know, many, many moons ago. Then cotton, you know, became more popular. It became more readily available and cheaper. And also, you know, finer silks became more readily available. So during that period of change, silk, dupion or finer silks started to be used for the goal work, but you can't really work on a fine silk with very heavy wires and also threads that go through to the back that are very thick. So they started to use a layer underneath, and that now it can be cotton, it can be calico, linen, but it has to be quite a fine weave. And the reason for that is A, to support your top fabric, so if it's silk dupion, which a lot of the pieces are worked on these days, then you would use that layer to support all the gold work threads on top. But also when you turn it over to secure your threads to the back, so none of the wires are ever taken through to the back.
Okay.
They all lie on the surface. And because when you chop a wire off, it's not going to unravel, it's not going to shred. You know, there's no core to it, so it's not like you're going to be able to see the core. It just gets cut off and it's on the surface. Mm-hmm. Whereas with the threads, because they have a core, you take the very end of those threads through to the back of your fabric, and you need to secure them off. So the layer, the two layers, enables you to oversew on the back side of your material without actually coming through to the front side of your material, because you've got that two layers. We've always used the two layers. Traditionally you work it on a slate frame, and the slate frames keep the material extremely taut. But nowadays you can get other frames. Some of them work better than others. We tend to use the bar frames, and we pin it on to the bar frames, and that keeps it very, very taut as well. So if you're doing smaller pieces, to set up a slate frame can take you a day. But when you're teaching small classes, you know, and you're doing smaller pieces, you can set up a bar frame in 10 minutes from having your material, having your frame not even set up, and opening it up and setting your frame up and then putting your material on. 10 minutes, I've got it down to.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So,
well, and I can see if you've got silk over some cotton, I can see why tension, tautness in all directions is absolutely critical then.
That's right. So if you're using a much, much looser weave fabric, A, when you're taking your needle up and down, it wouldn't necessarily come up in the right place, because your holes and your thicker threads would be, you know, guiding where your needle was coming up. Right. But B, when you're trying to keep it taut at the edge, obviously, you know, it's harder to keep it taut when it's a looser weave. So it's always two fine weaves that you want to be using on the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, I'm getting the picture. Oh, man. Oh, man, I got to try this.
You've got to. You really have. I'll have to send you a kit.
Oh, I already been studying. I've been studying the website there. Yeah, I'm. This is dangerous. Dangerous, yes. And then you have a book. You just released the book here, a couple months ago, right?
We did, yes, yes. It's been out for since the end of November. I did get some pre-copies sent to me to do some of the shows. We've been doing this book for about 15 years. And when we first started it, there was only those two books that I was talking about earlier, and that was it. And then, you know, work and babies and marriage and that lot gets in the way, and
yep.
we just put it on the back burner, really. It's always been in the back of our minds to do, but Mum could only take it to a certain point, and she needed me to do, you know, the computer work, because she's never been particularly good with computers. She doesn't even have an email. Still doesn't have an email. So she's never, I mean, she's getting into Facebook now, but, well, that's a whole other story.
So this book, this book is this a how-to or a project book or a combination?
So it starts off, there's a really good book by Mary Brown, and that goes heavily into the detailed history of gold work. So, and then other books have covered it to some degree. So we didn't really want to dwell very much on the history of gold work. So we've covered a couple of pages on the basics of the history. And then we go into threads and tools and materials, all the different things that you need. And there's some fabulous pictures, you know, to accompany the different threads, and to show how you can, you know, there's like a rainbow of twists, and it tells you all the different things that you can do with twists and how they're used within gold work. So there's lots of really good pages in that section talking about what you need in order for you to do gold work, or what you can use within gold work. And then there's the section which is the technique section, so it tells you all the different techniques, all the main techniques of gold work. There's an odd few that aren't in there, but it's all the main techniques that you can use within gold work, right from simple chipping up to ornoué and pearls over string, which are more complicated techniques. And then it hits into a little stitch section, because you always need a few odd stitches like French knots, etc. within any book, it's always essential. So we've got a little essential stitch guide, and then it goes into a project section. So there are, within the technique section, there are also a few smaller projects for you to have a go at. So there's some within the ornoué section. There's a little bee and a little ladybird, and there's some brooch frame, because we have these beautiful brooch frames now that are really, really quick and simple to use. And we have some brooches that people can make up. And then you head into your project section, where you've got anything from a complete beginner project. So we've got these nice little trees. We've got a doodle, because it doesn't have to be something that you see. It could just be a design. You've seen a design somewhere, or, you know, you've just been doodling with your pencil and you think, oh, my goodness, that would make a fabulous goal work, you know, and goal work can be anything. So we've got a really nice doodle in there. And then it goes onwards and upwards into squirrels. And we've got a very nice African lady. And then right up to my peacock, which is a sampler in itself. And it's got lots of different techniques within that. And that's the one that's on the front cover. It's the tail of my peacock that's on the front cover. But we didn't stop there. So that's basically most gold work books, that's where they stop. And you get a bit of further reading, or, you know, suppliers, and that's it. And we wanted to make it a bit more special. So when people get a book, they might like only maybe four or five projects within the book. And then after that, you know, it's useful because you can still look at threads that you might use or techniques, but you're never going to do any more of those projects. So, right. You know, that section is sort of like defunct. But at the back, we actually have about 40 pieces of my lady's works. And there's a few of the Instagrammers on there that have got fabulous pieces of work. And then, you know, mine and my mum's pieces of work in a gallery section at the back, just to, you know, inspire people and encourage them to go from a project and do their own pieces and create their own designs and create wonderful works of art. So, yeah, it's a little bit different to your normal gold work books.
Well, that's a great idea, because that inspiration thing, I think in a lot of people, if they just spend a few minutes, that there's some design talent in them that they don't believe is there. And, you know, with an idea and, like you said, even a doodle, to just create a little swirl design or something, you can really do something beautiful with that gold work material.
That's right. And you know, in this day and age where we've got quick access to photography, you can put it on your computer really quickly, you can blow it up and warp it and move it around, and then you can print it out. You know, it's so easy to just create a design nowadays. So yeah, it's design now is very, very accessible and very easy for people to just create something beautiful.
Yeah. Tell me about Or Nuit, because that, every time I see that, my eyes stop. I find that to be an amazing, it just creates an amazing visual effect.
Yeah. Well, I'm quite pedantic, and I'm a bit of a perfectionist, and I like all the really complicated and tricky goal work techniques, and mum likes to just like get on. And so anything more, any of the Or Nuit or the Pearls Over String, I tend to do all that kind of stuff, and mum tends to work on the bigger, more flamboyant things. So Or Nuit, so there's a bit of a common myth with Or Nuit, and everybody is called anything that is, because it's shaded gold. That's what it actually means. And it stems from the continent, from France. And that's where the name has come from. And or is gold in French. So it's basically using a thread over the gold to create a design. So you're actually only using one type of gold thread. It's the colours that are going over it that then create whatever the picture or the small design is. So Or Nuit is actually only when it's vertical or horizontal. Or Nuit is always done on the straight. If you're not doing it on the straight, it's actually called Italian shading. So anything that's curved or is circular would be Italian shading. It wouldn't be Or Nuit. But Or Nuit gets covers everything these days. Everybody calls it Or Nuit, even when it's actually Italian shading. And I do it myself anyway, because it's just easier to say Or Nuit, because everybody knows what Or Nuit is and nobody knows what Italian shading is.
So, and in this day and age, we abuse all those definitions. So,
oh, we do. Yeah.
So I lay down a gold thread.
Yeah.
And then it's what I wrap around it or over it. That's my design.
You couch it down.
Okay.
So I did a beautiful little rabbit just recently, and it was a jumping hare, and it was bounding onto like a little hillock, and I did it in a circle design. So it was just a silhouette, and I started off using a thread called passing thread, which is one of the smaller threads, and I just basically couched with a thread that we use against all the gold. So the Royal School tend to use the Gutterman polyester thread, which is invisible against some of the gold. You have to get three shades of it to be invisible against all the different shades. And about 15 years ago, we found this wonderful thread that's translucent, and that's what we call it. And it's invisible against all the different shades of gold. You can even use it against copper and it won't show up because it just takes on the hue of the gold behind. So if you're doing a gold area, that's what we tend to use. And then I've brought in the black, which is a silhouette of this jumping hare, and it's landing basically. So it's just in mid flight and it's about to land on this little hillock, and it's all silhouetted. And then I've just continued with my round, and I've gone round and round, and on every line I've either stitched a bit of the translucent thread or the black, and that's the only two threads that I've used on it. And then as it grows, because the design is just drawn onto the backing fabric, it's almost like painting by numbers. So I'm just filling in the area where the rabbit is on my design, and then the rest of the area is just gold. And then as I've got to a certain size, just past the rabbit's head, I've then brought in a very fine 371 thread, which is very like the passing thread, but again, like the Jap thread, it's more of a Lorex, and the colour, there's loads and loads of different shades. So it's like the passing, which is gold, silver, or copper, but it's a multitude of colours. So I've brought in like a reddy opal behind and just used that with the gold. So instead of couching down two pieces of gold, I've then couched the passing and the 371 thread to create like a sunset look behind this rabbit, and it is really quite I posted it on Facebook and Instagram the other day, and it does look rather special. I'm very pleased with it.
Well, I'll have to get that on the page for this podcast so people can see it. Yes.
Yeah.
So you get much time to do personal stitching?
Not masses, no, not with I've got two small boys, one's 10 and one's six, and I don't know if you've got any children yourself, Gary.
Yeah, they're both grown. They're both grown, and you just got a whole bunch of sympathy right there. Holy smokes.
Have you got boys or girls?
One of each.
One of each. Well, I've got two boys, and boys, when they're young, they are an abundance of energy. So you spend a lot of your time playing taxi and ferrying them around to all the different karate and swimming and scouts and dance and football. They do it all.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah, that takes up a lot of my time at the moment. But as you know, they do grow up, and then you get a bit more time on your hands. So at the moment, I'm slightly lacking in time for stitching. I do a lot of stitching, don't get me wrong, but it's not my own. It tends to be other people's when I'm in classes. Right. And I do a little, you know, demonstrations here, there, or, you know, if we're in a one-off class and we're doing a beginner's class, when my mum's demonstrating, I'll catch anybody up that's falling a little bit behind, like the little Goldwork fairy. That's what I am. And anybody that's been in our classes knows that's what I do. I just help out a little bit and catch him up a bit.
So that's your stitching these days, yes.
Yeah, in the main. But then, you know, I did this this hair the other day. A lovely lady called Philippa Turnbull that runs the Cruel Work, she wanted me to demonstrate different ways of using passing thread. So I actually created this piece of work, a sampler in passing, specifically for that class. I was stitching. I spent about 8 hours stitching over a couple of days, and got quite a lot of it done. I did all the different samples in the passing thread. How you can use passing thread? Yeah. All the different ways.
All the ways.
That's it.
Our daughter has two boys, and when we're recording this, we just the previous weekend we'd spent 4 days with those two boys, and the power of being a grandparent is you get to go home.
They are endless. One of my friends is the godmother of my eldest, and she said the good thing about being the godmother is you can come, you can play with him for a bit, and then you get to go home.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I've seen firsthand what two boys will do. Yep.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but boy. I've got them into stitching.
Yeah.
And John actually loves using the sewing machine, but he also does hand stitching, and he sews on his scout badges on his jumper. And he's just turned six, so I had him stitching when he was about four. William is my youngest. Yeah, he's done. For Christmas, there was a Christmas tree decoration competition that they had at school, and William stitched a star, and John stitched a heart on a Christmas decoration. We did it on felt, and then we put it around a little piece of card, and put a little tag on it, and they were Christmas tree decorations.
Excellent. Yeah, excellent. Well, that's great, because so many people, their kids just aren't interested. And even if they do it for a little while and then they don't do it, it's still a skill that they can pick up at any time in life. And I think that's just really important.
Yeah, they'll always be able to sew their own buttons on.
if nothing else, yes.
If nothing else.
Right, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, this has just been a treat talking to you. Thanks so much for making the time. Appreciate it.
It's no problem at all. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I have too. And now I have more questions, so that means you'll have to come back. We have to work it out. Yep.
I would love to. Yep. It would be my absolute joy.
Well, I think that's going to have to happen. So,
yep. Thank you.
All right. Thanks to everybody for listening, and we'll be back on Wednesday.